Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to week four of the Smart Coaching Series on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm excited to be joined by my guest host today, Dr. Brian Garrity and Dr. Clayton Kuklick. Guys, great to be back here in week four. The season's moving along quick.
Thanks for having us back, Keith. Happy to have another week and another segment in Smart Coaching and get everybody to take a deep breath and have a relaxful, uneventful, stress-free week.
I'm all for that. Let's rock and roll, Keith. Week four on stress, athlete stress.
Yeah, that's something, you know, we're going to put the focus back on that athlete today. And we usually, as we hit the season, really get focused on their role in the team, their role on the field. But I think we have to be cognizant of the other things that that human being is dealing with that really can affect their performance and overall affect their health. And that's some of the stresses that they face.
Well, that's exactly right. It made me think, too, though, really, to coach. People listening to the podcast, if you're wondering about what different stress makes for athletes, just think about what stress makes in your own everyday life. If you're worried about, and the only skill you have is to put your head down and focus, that can get you through some things. But if you don't have an array of tools or resources or change your structure, next thing you know, you end up with some problems of your own personal health, heart attack and anxiety. Depression, all these mental health issues are very much related to stress and how we handle that stress.
Yeah, I mean, I think stress, I mean, is generally a broad term, but thinking about it here, it's thinking about the different types of stress that we can experience. We can have eustress, which we would think of things that we're excited about or things that we're worried about being distress, and that can come in the form of like psychological stressor, or it could be an emotional stressor, or it could be something physical. A physical stressor, meaning the amount of load and workload that we're putting out, stressing our body in a physical way, which kind of piggybacks off of the previous podcast that we covered on strength and conditioning, where we were talking a little bit about loads and how to managing loads there. And what we were doing was kind of talking about how strength and conditioning practices to manage the physical stress loads during the in season. And here we kind of piggyback off that in this podcast, but also bring forth other psychological or emotional stressors that directly impact performance. Because, I mean, it's simple that even the research suggests that the more stressed we are, and again, we're using a broad term, those stressors can come from a variety of different places, but they directly impact how well we perform, skills, a variety of skills, and they don't have to always just be tactical or technical skills.
We see that all the time, that players over the course of the season maybe get into a rut. They're performing maybe not up to standard, and I think it's an opportunity to take a look at and maybe help them with some of the other things that maybe are stressing them out beyond, like we mentioned last week, all the physical requirements of the game. When we're looking at that aspect in general, what are some of the sources of stress?
Yeah, for athletes, general sources of stress are going to be practice, peer relationships, school, and so think about those three things. You've got the peer relationships, which for teenagers, remember, too, is huge. It is not something to easily dismiss, that those kids are growing adolescents. They are coming into adulthood trying to figure out who they are, what their place is in the world, who are their friends, who's not being nice to them that day. You know, nowadays you've got social media and the stress from that and the relationships and inner communications they have with their peers on social media. The relationships for those kids is huge to keep in mind of why are kids doing what they're doing when they're acting out or if they're trying to be cool, you know, who are they trying to impress? School, the emphasis on grades, GPA, trying to get into the best and brightest college, get scholarships, you know, then they go out to practice and hopefully practice is a release for them. Hopefully for was, you know, and that's how it was for me. That's how weightlifting and football practice for me was in high school, you know, the best part of my day. And a lot of people don't know, my mother passed away when I was 13, you know, when I was going into my freshman year of high school. And the weight room and football practice and the football coach and the staff were really like family to me. Those were father figures to me. My dad did a great job in letting me have that outlet. But hopefully, you know, the kids perceive that and they're having an enjoyable time. And I think that's why also, like, a lot of kids gravitate towards sports and coaches, and they build that relationship because they provide them with a home and a way to deal with that stress that they're receiving elsewhere.
Yeah. I would just add that a lot of these stressors, again, as Brian mentioned, occur in the practice session and then also outside of the practice session. So there's kind of these inverse relationship, but they're working together, you know, where they overlap into the other, and it's not like we walk into practice in a clean slate and everything's good. An interesting component here is this is really tough to see at the subtle levels. Yeah, we see an athlete that acts out, and we can see when they're stressed at the extreme cases that something significant happens in their life. And those are generally clear observations that we can make. But I often think about the subtle ones that we often miss that are happening on a daily basis where there's, you know, just maybe there's, we can't really quantify perhaps how many errors occurred in catching the football in a given day that Timmy or someone only caught 8 balls when they're normally perfect. And perhaps that there's another stressor that's implicating that. And that's what I kind of often think about. But I think there are some tools that perhaps you could put in place to kind of do that, whether it's quick checks that you're doing, performing every day in practice, just to get a quick check-in on the athlete to see, perhaps get a reading on how they are dealing with the average daily stressors that implicate performance, so you can better understand them in the practice environment.
So I'll give you an example of one that comes to mind. I speak again from my own experience. My sophomore year of high school, I was a starting center. I had to work on long snapping. And this is how, at an individual level, I think what Clayton's talking about too, is how the individual's interpretation, in the academic literature, we call it like their appraisal. The primary appraisal can be positive, it can be dangerous, or it can be irrelevant. In this case, I had this long snap, and I was an absolute train wreck, long snapping. 5 yards back, it was a disaster. And physically, there was nothing so-called wrong with me. You know, you only had to pitch the ball 5 yards, you know, between your legs, and it's not really hard. So I was certainly strong enough and had the coordination to do it, but I couldn't do it. You know, and that ball would bounce everywhere, you know, to on the ground, at the quarterback's foot, his ankle, you know, 10 feet over his head. And I just remember sitting there getting so stressed out about it, and I didn't have the capacity to manage that stress at that time. I kind of wish I had it. I mean, it took me a while because what we actually had to do, Keith, and as a football coach, you're going to laugh at this, but I moved to guard when we had the long snap. I've never seen that before, and you hardly ever see it. Maybe you see it maybe you've seen it at the levels you're at too, but I moved to right guard, and the right guard came, and he would snap it. And it just used to drive me bonkers to watch with ease the way he would just flip it back. So I had to work on that, and that was one of the ways to handle the stress.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think of, like, let's just say that the environment changed. Perhaps you were snapping, and I don't know if you remember, like, maybe everybody was watching, and, like, this was special teams time, yeah. And everybody stopped, and there's, you know, 60 people waiting. In comparison, you go and do it in pre-practice, and nobody's out there with you and just the coach, no problem.
Yeah, it's certainly better when there's less people around, and it's not during the game. But that's the thing about being the center, too. The play doesn't start until I snap the ball. So if I don't snap it correct, then everybody's looking at me and the coach is in my face. I felt bad, too. I put Coach Brona, he's retired from football. He's not listening. But he used to be like, hey, Garrity, just relax and throw it back there. Took me months after practice snapping and just dealing really more emotionally and mentally with it than it was physically.
Well, you mentioned that idea of providing coaches some tools, and I think there's a couple aspects of this. Focusing on the on-field stress and when you're able to maybe identify those, or maybe there are some tools to help you identify those. What recommendations do you have for coaches to help players in these kinds of situations?
Well, the one thing that comes to mind too is generally don't make the players perceive that stress as greater or enhance their lack of coping. You know, don't get in the way of progress. So by yelling at a kid or by ramping up the pressure at the beginning of a drill or the first time they're doing something, subtle things like when you're saying like, oh, this is a really big game, or we got to have you this week. You know, those are the things too that are really going to increase the athlete's perceptions of stress. And you want to probably decrease those things so they just treat it as another challenge, something to overcome and grow through, rather than gosh, dog, if I don't get this, the whole season is down the crapper and everybody's going to hate me type of stuff. Kids are generally already aware, well aware of the implications of, you know, winning and losing. So that'd be the one thing. In the stress research too, they often talk about it as problem focused or emotion focused. So you can change the situation or you change your response to the situation. Changing the drills to go from more easier drills, simpler things, letting people know that they, or that, that would be the practice environment type of changes like Clayton was talking about. The emotion problem thing would be, Coach Vollmer used to do a great one of it at Tennessee. He would just say, you don't have to be a superhero. You don't have to be Superman. You just got to be your own guy and go out how we coached it. And it was a way of saying, hey, guys, yeah, we already know you're going to play in front of 105,000 people. You don't have to be a superhero every day. Just do your job. So you kind of narrow it back down into their perception, the athlete's perception and the meaning that they're making from something, and trying to reduce that into a bite-sized piece rather than they've got to consume this whole big demon right away.
Yeah, just to piggyback some practical tools I mentioned before is having like athlete check-ins or something, but I would have some as a coach. I wouldn't necessarily tell athletes you're doing it, but perhaps just have some clear observational behaviors that you're kind of looking for, perhaps in, during warm-ups when you're giving your scans of the athletes and working throughout during perhaps warm-ups to kind of see what their emotional tank or their stress level is. And you could probably pre-structure some questions on the front end that you're maybe asking athletes to get a little bit of an indication on where the stress is. And then also embedding some tools, stress relief tools, in practices, drills that you're already using, for perhaps introducing them, whether it's positive self-talk, creating routines to reduce stress. That's a very big one in the academic literature of Olympic level athletes, of techniques that they use to reduce stress, is just performing a routine. And a practical example of this is a pre-snap routine that you're teaching athletes and then connecting that to show them how this reduces stress. Perhaps individual cue words, teaching athletes where, you know, what their particular cue words are, positive self-talk, teaching these things and embedding them in drills. And then, you know, once you've kind of introduced perhaps all of these different tools that athletes can use within them, is perhaps having athletes create their own kind of stress management plan, which might also incorporate, this is kind of like a checklist that they're doing. Hey, when I feel stressed, I'm going through my check boxes here to kind of reduce that. And like part of that process could also be kind of helping them highlight to keep, to make sure that they're getting enough sleep at night, 7 to 8 hours, to help reduce that stress. And then after kind of perhaps maybe they've put together their own stress management plan, after you kind of present lots of different tools that they could use, is then also using that plan to help correlate it with things that are happening outside off the field, that they can use that plan too to help manage their stress as well. And then that way we can kind of hopefully, I'm going to say, kill two birds with one stone, but they're using their stress management toolbox, both for things on the field and then also off the field, to reduce reduce stress and then ideally improve performance.
I know as coaches, some of us have that extended period of time where we really get to know that athlete and start to understand that maybe something's a little bit different or something's bothering him. So we might see some of those stresses. We were a big roster at Baldwin Wallace University, 160 kids at one point. So you start to see a lot of kids, and one of our techniques for just every week checking in with them outside of the times we would see them was they turned in, and we got this from Wayne State head coach Paul Winters, is that they would turn in what was called a truth statement, and it covered things like, did they go to all their classes? What are they getting in their classes? Did they give everything in their workouts? I think they would grade themselves on their workouts. And then an area for them to essentially, is there anything else you would like me to know about? And guys would maybe feel a little bit less intimidated in stepping forward and saying, hey, this is on my mind, or this is bothering me a little bit. And it was useful for us to connect with our players in that way, help us engage them in other conversations, and start to bring out some of those things that maybe could get in the way of them being the best athlete, best person that they could be.
I think for me, that's a really important point, is that you're trying to communicate to the athlete in a way that they want to develop themselves. And I don't think that we probably do a great job at that yet. And so I'm thinking of some of the literature on stress and the relationship of power and how coaches influence athletes and how they affect their behavior. And that a lot of coaches are very, very well intentional, you know, that they want to help the athletes grow and do well in school, football, succeed in life, use sport to really build character and lifelong skills. And so communicating to an athlete, like, I want to help you develop you in a really authentic way. And if I can help build that relationship with you and provide some advice, some mentoring, and some tools, you know, to help you succeed. And then also I can reflect and then change the structure of practices to help create a more, not a stress-free environment. I kind of joked at the beginning of the podcast that we're going to have a stress-free week. And you really don't, because stress makes you stronger too. Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of homeostasis and juggling, you know, between too much stress, not enough stress, good stress, bad stress, and then the skills or the tools that we have to manage that stress over the course of our lives. And we want to strengthen the communities. We want to strengthen the individuals, individual athletes, and communicate to them that we're here with them. We're on the same side. I think that's a tough struggle to do that, though.
I really enjoy the truth statement. I think that's a useful tool that you can get lots of different information about. And I'll say, I mean, there's subtle things, like you're developing the relationship there a little bit, where hopefully you're providing some opportunity for athletes to be a little bit more comfortable to share some of those things. But to piggyback off that, I would argue that the coach probably should also share in some other ways too, in respect to that stress, to kind of show that, yeah, this is something that happens on the field, off the field, and here are some tools that you can use that have worked for me, perhaps to kind of manage these things. But I think the critical piece also that Brian said is that we're practicing these tools in, you know, some stressful situations. So, I mean, not all the time do we want to always completely eliminate the stress, but yeah, we want to facilitate it by, yes, here's an environment where stress presented that way. Here are some tools that we talked about. Try using them out, and we practice using them, those stress reliefs or those stress reducers. It's a skill, just like it is a technical skill, just like it is a tactical skill that we want to practice.
I'll do what I do then and go back to and intersect this. Well, what does the coach do with that information then, Keith? If let's say at Baldwin Wallace, too. I know Baldwin. I know BW. I played there, actually. Mm-hmm. That was my last game, by the way. But what do you do? Let's say you've got a 20-year-old or a 19-year-old young black man that's at a Baldwin Wallace, which is a predominantly white institution, and he says, I'm stressed because people treat me badly because I'm black, or I hear things said to me about my race that are not welcoming. And this is a reality that people of color have at times in this country, especially at colleges, because it's not uncommon for a lot of football players to be at predominantly white institutions and to experience, you know, put downs or degrading language, you know, subtle forms of even racism. Well, is the coach just going to tell the athlete to suck it up? Is the coach going to say, well, why don't you try meditation? Or is the coach going to go, we have a structural issue here at this university. Maybe I need to meet with a student life, and we need to talk to the faculty senate. And what are the ways that we as a football coaching staff can be more inclusive and aware and try to reduce some of these larger kind of social issues and concerns? So that's where, you know, I go back and forth between, I think at an individual level, solution-based management of stress, meditation and thought control and positive self-talk, like Clayton said, can be very useful. Other times, though, right, what's the source of the problem and what are we doing with that too? So we've got to be thinking kind of in and out of society, you know, the individual within society and back and forth.
Well, I think that's exactly it. And as a coach, I think it's a skill, maybe the art of coaching. You need to develop how you're going to respond to those different situations. The worst thing is you just leave it alone. Like, I have no idea. I've never dealt with this before. I mean, you do have to get involved. And I think the great thing today in our education system is there is a lot of support, whether that's your local high school or you're at the university, that there are people, you know, you could get involved with at the school who are going to help out with some of those situations that you don't know how to handle. And I think as coaches, you know, we have to be willing to admit at times, like, I'm going to need Absolutely. To get an assistance on this.
Keith, I'll ask you a question, too. As I'm thinking about, the NCAA has a resource on the website, and I'll give them credit for this, that they have a free mental health PDF kind of ebook on the website. There's the Association of Applied Sports Psychology, ASP, that has a variety of information and great membership. And then you've got the American Psychological Association and other organizations, sociological organizations that work on this at a social level. Do you know of any other resources for coaches on mental health or athletes' mental health? Specifically,
no.
Kind of written for coaches.
No, unfortunately, you know, I'm looking at my bookshelf here. I don't think I have any anything formally written that deals with that kind of stuff.
I mean, isn't that something? I think that's, you know, and I want to be a part of the solution too. And we're trying to, you know, it's just a matter of how fast we can write and do research. But there's a desperate need, I think, to help enlarge our worldview of people and what stress is and what really bothers people and gets them stressed out, and how we can develop more psychologically healthy organizations. That's one of the things, you know, Clayton and I work in a graduate school of professional psychology. We're not psychologists. We studied psychology, but we work with a variety, 25 plus psychologists here, and they are great resources, and their students are great resources, and they have a variety of clinics, and we've got a great sport and performance psychology program, and you know, those students really kind of are more attuned to these things and can have some great conversations with coaches. And we're also seeing nowadays, you know, high profile coaches starting to talk about these things more and more because of somebody, their own personal experience, you know, that they had an early onset heart attack, or they had an early onset diagnosis with anxiety or depression, or somebody in their family. Hopefully, the one in football too is the Jason Foundation does a nice job with suicide ideation and suicidal awareness. And so I think we have a desperate need, yes, to reach out to those people and for coaches to kind of learn what's going on in those things and to reduce some of that stigma.
I'd add two other kind of categories. I know we talked about the racial aspect of African-Americans, but there's also females that are playing football more and more. We're starting to see that as well. And then also, maybe a more subtle thing is offensive linemen being heavy or perceived as fat and obese. And I mean, I can remember coaches used to tell in some, well, especially in comparison when you got skill guys that are walking around with a half t-shirt on and their abs are like exploding right out of their thing. And then you have the linemen that are trying to do the same thing. I can remember a coach used to telling multiple linemen that they need to be on the full t-shirt list. Those types of comments would implicate stress and performance, but subtly, I mean, athletes aren't blind. They're looking to see their body type versus my body type. Now, granted, in general, offensive linemen are going to be bigger body type people, but at the same time, you know, adolescents up to 20, 21 years old, I mean, those are things that you would want to bring awareness to and provide resources for and practice those stress-reducing tools that could be implicating performance.
Well, that's a group, I think, you know, an interesting group because you think about how they might deal with stress, and we always want them to get bigger, but, you know, I am starting to see more and more want and desire for more athletic linemen that they can easily go and mask some of that by eating and overeating and getting into some of those bad habits that affect them. I think what's interesting is a lot of these guys, as they graduate and finish football, they're this big, heavy guy, and they come walking through your door a year or two later, and you barely recognize them because now they're, you know, thinned out, skinny kid who, you know, is nothing like the player he was. So I think we do have to monitor that group as well for a lot of different things. I can think also in particular of an example where, you know, we had this kid who's probably 255, 260, and he comes back from the summer and he's 230 pounds and he wanted to lose the weight to look a certain way, and good for him probably in some aspects, but not exactly what we expected as well.
Well, the lineman is a really interesting example of how the perception of stress can change based on if what their desired body weight goals are. You know, if they want to lose weight or gain weight, you know, a lot of linemen, I was one of them too, that gaining weight was bad stress. I didn't like being that heavy. A lot of guys have trouble overfeeding, overeating. They're eating when they're not hungry. And that's a coping mechanism that long-term can be maladaptive. It can be bad for you, you know, with extreme obesity and health problems there. So the gaining of weight can be stressful. And then especially, like you said, when they're done playing or they want to lose weight to be more healthy, to, you know, look a certain way, So it brought to mind that the skill really too of self-regulation and the need to be able to tap into how you feel, how you're processing things, what you're thinking, what triggers you to respond a certain way, and how do I stop and develop, you know, better coping skills or more stronger skills to where when football is over, I can lose weight if I want to, or and then regulate down, especially for the big guys, because that can be a health problem long-term wise. So I think I'm bringing up self-regulation as a way to manage that and helping athletes grow rather than just telling them all the time, you know, just what to do, or here's a magic drill, or here's a magic pill, this is all you need, rather than, you know, let's, again, self-regulate and develop yourself more fully.
I'll change gears a little bit. Some of the stressors that we've talked about thus far are ones that are, I mean, perceived obvious that they would have a negative implication on performance. However, how about, I mean, there is some literature on being excited towards playing, what we would call eustress. Being excited about something can also cause some stress, but I could also perceive that as being positive, that, oh, guys are excited and they're ready to go and ready to play, but also that can have a negative impact on performance as well. For example, I mean, this resonated with me. I kind of always hung my hat on being full of energy and being so prepared to play because I was so excited for it. Well, I didn't sleep all that well the night before, right? And then the whole next day, I'm so not worried about it. I'm so excited to play. And I would definitely call that eustress. I'm excited that by the time game time comes around, that I'm almost burnt out a little bit. Right. My mind has been going over these plays so many times because I'm so excited about it. And then on top of it, I didn't sleep. You know, maybe I got 6 hours sleep instead of the normal, nice and relaxed 8 hours of sleep because I'm so excited, that can negatively impact performance. The point being is that we would also want to provide strategies and tools for those types of athletes as well, and not necessarily those ones where there's a negative thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, so one of the things that I just saw one of the sports psychologists doing was, I think it was actually knitting. They had an Olympic-level athlete, it might have been in this past Winter Olympics, knitting, you know, just to distract them and take their mind. So like Clayton says, basically he was ruminating, you know, right, getting these thoughts over and over and replaying it. And coaches are great about visualization and athletes seeing themselves achieve victory or making a block. And then they do it over and over and over to where now it's exhausting.
Yeah.
So one of the ways to do it is, again, to, you know, this guy was knitting, but you could listen to music. You could go for a walk. I think it's interesting, Keith, to watch athletes because a lot of times they'll play a game or do another activity that's not their own sport. So you'll see like linemen, right? They're going to throw the ball around and run routes.
Mm-hmm.
The wide receivers and whatever, they're not going to get down in a three-point stance, but they may start thinking they're kickers and want to kick the ball. Or if it's a college setting, there's bats or balls laying around. Guys start playing with baseballs and they're football players and vice versa. The baseball guys would want to play football. And they're doing what they did as children. You know, they're coping by playing a game. It happens to be a sport too, but they're playing around kind of having fun to distract themselves from, you know, all the other distress that they're experiencing.
Yeah, that's interesting. My son's baseball team, they play in some really competitive tournaments, and their coach, a couple college coaches, before the game, he breaks out a football, and they're out in the outfield, you know, running routes, going 7-on-7 against each other for like 10 minutes, and he actually de-stressed that team, and they went out and they played better than they had in that tournament. And I think it's an interesting thing. And I see it all the time. You know, you get off the bus, you get to the field, you know, you usually give your guys time to walk around and give them the footballs or whatever. And yeah, the linemen are out there running around doing that. You see the guys trying to kick field goals, all that kind of stuff, and laughing and having fun. And, you know, you're thinking these are the same guys who were sitting there on the bus, maybe with their fist clenched, ready to go. And now you got them loosened up a little bit. And that's not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing. But I would encourage us then to think about problem focused, right? How do we change the environment now? If we're doing these things to cope with some stuff that's really stressful, can we think about changing the practice field, you know, practice time, to make it more enjoyable to where people want to continue to do it? if possible, right? As you're so worried about, we like to play a clip of Nick Saban who's saying there's not a lot of options. I see that on, I guess, on social media, on Twitter, that, you know, there's a clip of Saban saying that, you know, I can make a champion, and I believe he can. He's shown the record. But if sustainability-wise and long-term-wise too, and he's certainly had success, but can we change the practice environment to make it such that it's more enjoyable, where people don't have to do those things? You know, can you embed a game, or can you embed something curious, creative, exploratory, you know, these different types of adjectives? Can we think about changing it so it's not so rigid and stressful, you know, distressful, mm-hmm. to where, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so I think what you're mean is that we take this like a warm-up type approach, right, where the football guys and everybody's kind of changing positions, and we think that's a creative idea to kind of reduce. So how could we even take the linemen? Now we get into their technique-specific aspects of linemen. How can we disrupt that and make a creative practice within that space? Similarly, how we kind of change the whole pass where linemen are running routes here, how can we still get them better at their technique thing by disrupting, being more creative, exploring different things, and getting that same type of environment even when they're in their offensive line group, you know, working on a certain technique or a tactic within there, you know, disrupting, kind of using the same approach except at a more individualized level, position specific.
Yeah, well, I think in general, in terms of how you might do that, I think adding things that are going to be a little bit different. And I talk with Andy Ryland on our weekly podcast all the time about vision, decision, action, and that cycle. And we really take a look at drills and put focuses on them in a different way. For example, we were talking about, you know, just a half line passing drill and how you might set that up. And the idea is we wanted our players to get confident and get feedback from them and in doing things. So, you know, we would spend some time debriefing with them, understanding what they saw, understanding what, you know, where they were at with things. And it gives us a good idea, you know, number one, as a play caller, where are my guys' minds at? What do they feel good about? But I think it adds that novelty to it, that when you have to work, and it's not, I hear guys talk about everyday drills all the time, and they go out, you know, over the whole course of the season and have this 10-minute period that looks exactly the same in practice, you know, 60 as it does in practice one. I think we just have to look at that and reframe it and use our time efficiently and make them feel productive. And I think a lot of those things, when the mind's active and they're having to work, I think kind of, you know, puts the focus elsewhere and is in a way taking away some of that stress as well.
I would just add that, and that's a great conversation to have with your team as well, or group, after the fact. Hey guys, I put you through something a little bit different here, and what I was doing was trying to, we noticed that our efficiency of our movement was better, and what we were doing is kind of distracting your mind with the different types of tasks, and this could be a useful tool that you could use in other situations when we feel stressed in particular ways as part of that. The individualized stress management plan that we were kind of talking about earlier, by providing different tools for athletes to use when stressful situations come up, because they're inevitable. It's going to happen.
Well, guys, I think another great conversation here. I know some of these things are things we have to work on all year long with our athletes. I think there's some good tips there, but I think some ideas too that we can implement right here in the season. Before we say our goodbyes for this week, guys, final thoughts.
The only thing that struck me too that I hadn't really mentioned is, you know, as we're thinking about school year, the playing year, you know, we're talking about strength conditioning in the last podcast, you know, practice planning, thinking about those kind of periods of stress throughout the season, as well as the off season, and as a coach trying to kind of monitor that and develop a long-term stress management, mental strength plan. Just as we would plan for techniques and tactics, let's plan for, you know, key mental aspects. So like, what that means is during, you know, midterm exams, is that between the strength coach, the football coach, and you know that the professors are offering a lot of tough classes, then, you know, the teachers in school, starting to reduce the stress. But prior to that, work on some emotion-based, either be meditation or reinforcing values, positive self-talk. There's a variety of strategies, but building that base, just like we would in strength conditioning, building up that mental base, that emotional tool bank, and then as a coach, kind of reducing some of the stress between the weight room and the practice field during like those super kind of stressful times during at the school year or graduation ceremonies or exam times or SAT, ACT type of things.
Yeah, I think it's definitely important, and just being cognizant of different things that are happening both on the field, off the field. I certainly like that true statement, to get more information, and then providing skill sets and practicing the skill sets, not only just having the tools that Brian was just talking about and implementing them at different times in your in-season and off-season, but also practicing them on a regular basis so that when stress comes up, like we said, it's inevitable, and we know that it impacts performance. So we would want to equip them with skills that they need to practice so that when they come up, they're able to manage the stress significantly.
Guys, another great conversation. A lot of ideas shared here that I think can help coaches. You mentioned some great resources in there as well. You're available. You guys, Twitter, at Dr. Cook, K-U-K, and at Dr. Garrity. Yep. And my Twitter is at Coach K. Grabowski. Also check out our new football coaching focused Twitter account, which is at FBDEV Coach. We'll be back next week. We're going to flip this, and we're going to put the focus on coach stress and some things that we can do as coaches to deal with some of the demands of the season.
Yeah, looking forward to the next podcast on coach stress.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.